Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Shiite Houthi rebels have taken guard outside Yemeni President Abdel Rabbah Mansour Hadi's house. The rebels fought off Yemeni forces to take over the positions today. Mr. Hadi is said to be safe inside the house. Houthi militants swept into Sana'a in September and have been recently angered at the possibility of a new federal system for Yemen.
В центре философии стоит только одно. Мы номер один.
That's Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, and he's saying President Barack Obama's State of the Union address reflects what he called the U.S. desire to dominate world affairs. Lavrov spoke Wednesday ahead of a meeting in Berlin to discuss Ukraine. He went on to say that the U.S. has set what he called an aggressive course, but he said Russia continues to cooperate with the West on fighting terrorism despite tensions over Ukraine. This from Reuters. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg today told reporters that there has been an increase in the amount of weaponry used by Russian forces in eastern Ukraine. He called on Russia to withdraw its forces from Ukrainian territory. He said NATO has been monitoring Russian troops in Ukraine for several months and has lately noticed an increase in the amount of equipment. Russia continues to deny that it has troops in Ukraine. Nigerian militant group Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for mass killings in the city of Baga and is promising further attacks. A video posted online today shows the Islamist group's leader declaring, "We carried out the Baga massacre and we're going to do more." Fighters are seen showing off what appear to be thousands of rifles, grenades, and rocket launchers. This is VOA News. Zambia's Electoral Commission halted the release of presidential election results today as voting in some districts stretched into a second day. In a statement on its website, the chairwoman of the commission said continued announcement of the results while people are still voting could unduly influence the voters. A Zambian newspaper cites her as saying the delays were the result of bad weather. Before the suspension, very early returns of less than 150,000 votes showed ruling party candidate Edgar Lungu in the lead. From the Associated Press, a Kenyan foreign affairs official told a TV audience today that the government is considering a request from the Chinese government for the release of 76 Chinese nationals being held on charges of computer hacking. The Chinese were discovered last December in Nairobi using sophisticated equipment allegedly for espionage. Tuareg separatists in Mali say they have pushed United Nations officials away from their post at an airfield in Kidal. They say they destroyed generators and tore down tents. A Tuareg protester tells the Associated Press UN officials fled the scene. The UN did not immediately comment. Reuters reports that the Roman Catholic Church has come out against a move that could extend President Joseph Kabila's rule in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The church decried a crackdown on protesters opposing a census bill being considered by Parliament. That bill would have elections postponed until the census is completed, perhaps beyond the president's current term in office. A rights group said today that at least 42 people have been killed in the crackdown. A top Lord's Resistance Army commander is now in custody at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Dominic Ongwen will undergo medical exams after being flown from the Central African Republic. He is expected to make his first court appearance soon. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi says U.S.-led airstrikes against the Islamic State group have been very effective and that his government expects more help from the international community.
We are on this almost on our own. We're trying to find our own ways to get arms. We have a very difficulty. This is a very, very difficult fiscal year. We are finding very hard to find the resources to purchase arms. There is some international sanctions against certain companies to get arms from. In actual fact, we are left alone almost to get these arms and munition.
The Prime Minister was interviewed by the Associated Press today in Baghdad. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says his country is in a race against time to free two hostages being held by the Islamic State. The group is holding them for a $200 million ransom. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Well, IOM has found that the displacement due to the Boko Haram insurgency has approached, if not surpassed, 1 million people already. So this is a combination of data collected by IOM and also data collected by the Nigerian government in separate states.
That was Leonard Doyle, a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, ballot counting continues today in Zambia following yesterday's presidential election. And government officials say the death toll in 3 days of protest in the DRC's capital has risen to 15. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, ballot counting continues today in Zambia following yesterday's presidential election. The winner will succeed Michael Sata, who died in October. There are 11 candidates on the ballot, but the top contenders are Defense Minister Edgar Lungu of Mr. Sata's Patriotic Front Party and Hakainde Hichilema. He heads the opposition United Party for National Development. The winner will serve the remaining year and a half of Mr. Sata's five-year term. Reporter Jillian Parker is in Zambia at Lake Kariba near the border with Zimbabwe and is monitoring the vote count. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the ballot count so far.
Today, it's actually been a little bit confusing as the Electoral Commission of Zambia paused the amount of results in mid-afternoon. There were a couple of dozen polling stations that were still voting this morning. Yesterday, we saw terrible rain delaying the delivery of ballot boxes and papers and preventing people from casting their vote. So they did continue to vote until today. You know, 13 or 14 constituencies out of the 150 that are in Zambia, that has been paused. We won't find any more results today, I don't think. We'll find out more tomorrow.
Do you think the final results will be announced tomorrow or just a progression of the vote count?
I think there will be a progression. I think we'll have a very clear idea about who the winner is by tomorrow night. They've provisionally said that they would have the inauguration on Saturday, so I'm assuming that they will announce the results formally on Friday. From the results that we have so far, it is quite clearly Edgar Lungu, who is in the ruling Patriotic Front, is well ahead in some provinces.
Jillian, any reports of any problems or irregularities?
There hasn't, but I spoke to the main opposition party leader, Hakainde Hichilema, yesterday, and he did hint that they would contest the vote if he felt that the vote wasn't free and fair. Now, yesterday he did mention that their rallies had been attacked by the opposition youths, that voters had been prevented from voting. The Electoral Commission is coming out and saying, well, no, it was the rain that would prevent the people. So there is a little bit of to and fro on that issue. And today, again, the Electoral Commission stopped releasing the results because they didn't want to actually impact voters that were going to the polling booth. It's very likely that the opposition party will say, actually, you're kind of closing the door after the horse has bolted, really, because you could have swayed potential voters for us. So it's highly likely that the opposition party will contest the vote, but whether they'll have a leg to stand on remains to be seen.
That's reporter Jillian Parker from Lake Kariba in Zambia. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Government officials say the death toll in 3 days of protest in the DRC's capital has risen to 15. Three more protesters died at the University of Kinshasa today when demonstrators clashed with police firing tear gas canisters. Clashes were also reported at three other locations in the capital. In the central neighborhood of Matate, witnesses reported that police fired live rounds into a crowd of protesters. The protesters oppose efforts by lawmakers to revise laws they charge will enable President Joseph Kabila to remain in office for many more years. A man believed to be Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau has claimed responsibility for the recent takeover of a military base in northern Nigeria and the deaths of more than 1,000 residents of Baga and nearby towns. The 35-minute video was posted on YouTube on Tuesday. In the video, Shekau threatened the life of Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. He also threatened the life of retired general and former president of Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari, who was running against Mr. Jonathan in next month's national election. Shekau also threatened the presidents of Chad, Cameroon, and Niger. Representatives of the four neighboring countries are meeting in Niger this week to plan increased support for Nigeria's troops. Nigeria has so far been unsuccessful in stopping Boko Haram's five-year assault on three northern states. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, says violence caused by the Boko Haram insurgency may have displaced over 1 million people in Nigeria based on tracking done between July 2014 and December 2014. They say unless the insurgency is stopped, the tragedy could leave many more displaced inside the country and in neighboring countries such as Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. Leonard Doyle is an IOM spokesperson in Geneva. He spoke with me about their tracking of Nigeria's displaced population.
Well, we use a tool called the Displacement Tracking Matrix. Essentially, this is a survey that IOM staff in the field use to capture what numbers of people have been displaced from their home by violence. We use it all around the world in about 20, 30 countries, and it's essentially the gold standard of figuring out who has been displaced by conflict, violence, natural disasters, whatever. And that's what we've been working with in Nigeria.
And what have you found?
Well, IOM has found that the displacement due to the Boko Haram insurgency has approached, if not surpassed, 1 million people already. So this is a combination of data collected by IOM and also data collected by the Nigerian government in separate states.
Basically, what are you finding are the humanitarian needs of the displaced people?
We've not looked in great detail yet, but obviously anybody who's had to leave their home due to violence is going to be in a bad way. They're not going to have a lot with them. They're not going to have enough food, enough resources, and they certainly won't have livelihoods. They won't have access to education. It's a very disruptive process for any society at the best of times. But for it to be taking place in the midst of the fear of an insurgency like this and the appalling atrocities that have been happening at the hand of Boko Haram, we fear for the worst for the population. And, of course, it's not just inside Nigeria. They've also been spreading into neighboring countries.
Speaking of the neighboring countries, such as Cameroon, Niger, and Chad, how are they coping with this situation?
Well, the impact, it's to be determined, but we're capturing details of large numbers of people who've been displaced into the surrounding countries, including Cameroon, including Niger, Chad.
And how are the governments reacting to this?
These are not necessarily the most stable countries in the world. They've got great challenges already. They've been dealing with really tricky economic problems. They have huge issues to cope with at the best of times. So this is not going to be helpful. And we are really concerned that if the Boko Haram insurgency continues unabated, that it will have an impact on regional peace and security.
What areas of Nigeria did you all use your tracking matrix?
Well, IOM looked at five states: Adamawa, Bauchi, Borno, Taraba, and Yobe. And we there collected data on 389,281, in or about 60,000 households. So the Nigerian National Emergency Management Agency, or NEMA, recorded another 520,000 or thereabouts in Borno, which is the heart of the insurgency, and in the states of Narawasa, Kaduna, Kano, Plateau, and Zamfara. So the total number that we're counting with some degree of certainty at this time is 912,000. But of course, we're not capturing everything necessarily, and the figure could well be above 1 million.
At what point would you say is this a crisis where the international community should get involved?
Well, the international community is involved. The IOM are an international intergovernmental organization, and we're helping our partners, the Nigerian government. I mean, the degree and the type of involvement will, of course, be at the request of the host government, so for example, Nigeria, or for that matter, surrounding governments. So how that pans out really depends on how the political leadership of the surrounding countries views this crisis, how the insurgency unfolds, and indeed what the international community advises
Looking at the other crises around the world, where would you say this particular crisis in Nigeria, where does that stand in terms of priorities for the international community?
Well, the international community is coping really with a series of very high-scale and serious emergencies, whether it's Iraq, Syria, Central African Republic, South Sudan, the Ebola crisis. And now the Boko Haram crisis has kind of crept up in the background, and the true scale of it is only now really becoming visible. Essentially, I think we're flagging it as this is important. Let's take stock of it immediately. It can't be ignored. It has huge regional consequences, not to mention for Nigerians.
That was Leonard Doyle, spokesperson for IOM. He spoke with me from Geneva. The new chief of the UN mission for Ebola emergency relief reports a decline in the overall numbers of new cases in West African countries. Ismail Oud Sheikh Ahmed told the UN General Assembly yesterday that the fight is far from over, but he said dire predictions of increases in infections did not come true. He credits major medical, logistical, and financial aid to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, and more than $2.5 billion in humanitarian aid. At the same session, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged member nations to help the West African region rebuild after the Ebola outbreak. Mr. Ban's UN Trust Fund spent more than $100 million to fight the disease. The UN chief said all countries should help restore essential services, fight common illnesses, create food security, and support the rebirth of educational systems. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls says France will create 2,680 new security positions over the next 3 years to help counter the threat of Islamic extremism. Mr. Valls announced the new measure today after his weekly cabinet meeting. He said Paris will spend nearly $500 million on the effort to boost the fight against terrorism in the wake of the deadly attacks in France earlier this month. Also today, French investigators say they have charged four people in connection with the attack on a kosher supermarket in eastern Paris that resulted in four deaths. Prosecutors said today that the men charged have ties to Amede Coulibaly, who killed four people in a hostage standoff at a Jewish supermarket January 9th, the day before he killed a policewoman. The four men are suspected of having provided support for Coulibaly, who was later killed by police. The shootings were part of 3 days of terror attacks on Paris that started with the killing of 12 people at the Paris headquarters of the satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo on Wednesday, January 7th. A hero has emerged from this month's terrorist attacks in Paris. Malian immigrant Lassana Bathily risked his life to save people during an assault on a kosher supermarket. This week, he realized his dream of becoming a French citizen. By coincidence, the assailant was also Muslim and from a Malian family. The French capital, Lisa Bryant, takes a look at two very different faces of Islam and of immigration in France.
The Saint-Just Hostel is a grim cement building sandwiched between a football field and a highway. Residents pick their way through a construction site to reach it. But inside, the smell of cooking and the sound of laughter hang in the warm air. Outside, a tea kettle simmers on a charcoal fire for the dozens of African workers living in its tiny rundown rooms. This is home. Not so long ago, the hostel was also home to 24-year-old Lassana Bathily. Bathily immigrated to France at the age of 16. He applied for citizenship several years ago. On Tuesday night, he got it during a high-level ceremony in Paris.
Alors, il y a plusieurs choses qu'on vous remet.
Prime Minister Manuel Valls handed Bathily his new French passport and saluted him for his courage. Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve called him a symbol of a peaceful and tolerant Islam. As France emerges from its deadliest terrorist attack in decades, Bathily is a country's hero.
Les gens me prennent comme un héros, mais moi je ne suis pas un héros. Pour moi, je suis Lassana
I'm not a hero. I'm just Lassana, Batili said at the ceremony. My story is the same as many immigrants in France. But at the Saint-Just Hostel, residents are proud of Batili. Many here also come from Mali. We're really happy, says one man. France intervened in Mali to rout out Islamists in 2013. Now a Malian has saved Frenchmen. Members of Batili's family still live here. Others, like cousin Abdoulaye Batili, drop over to visit.
Oui, la Sana est un travailleur. C'est quelqu'un qui, depuis qu'il est arrivé en France, il n'a cesse de travailler, de faire des formations.
Abdoulaye Batili says Lassana is a hard worker. Ever since he came to France, he's someone who has not stopped working and enrolling in training programs to get ahead. Lassana ended up working at a kosher supermarket. When jihadist Amedi Coulibaly attacked the store earlier this month, Batili hid many Jewish customers and snuck out to inform police. Uncle Moussa Batili applauds Lassana's actions.
Parce que les gestes qu'il a fait, ça fait partie de notre islam. Faut aider quelqu'un.
Helping others is part of Islam, Moussa Batili says. Islamists are twisting the religion to do all kinds of bad things. Moussa Batili arrived in France in 1993. He's a construction worker.
C'est très dur, mais quand même, il faut le faire. Parce que depuis le temps des colons, notre parents.
He says living in France is very difficult, but immigrants like himself need to succeed because they came here to help family back home. The kosher supermarket assailant, Amedi Coulibaly, was also born to a Muslim family from Mali. He grew up in the French suburbs and became a small-time criminal. He spent time in prison and turned to radical Islam. From his office across Paris, sociologist Michel Viviorca takes a look at these two very different paths.
On the one hand, somebody who found a good path in order to become French citizen. Not assimilated, but integrated. On the other hand, Coulibaly is a man who did not find his place in the French society. He was not so good at school, he had a personality which was not so easy, and so on. He could have found his place.
Like Coulibaly, many ethnic immigrants here have not found their place. In tough suburbs, young people did not join the I Am Charlie movement against extremism. The attacks have sparked soul-searching about a broken social system. Again, Michel Viviorca.
Of course, after this terrorist attack, there was a lot of emotion. Everybody wanted to be with everybody. I mean, so this big protest all together, national unity and so on. But today, a few days after that, we all know that big debates are now going to begin and that all the problems that made possible terrorism are still here.
Baidi Drame agrees. He's general secretary of an umbrella organization of Malian immigrant groups.
Je dis il faut faire une autre approche. L'approche c'est quoi? C'est aller vers ces enfants qui sont nés ici.
Drame says there needs to be a different approach to reaching kids who come from immigrant backgrounds and who are on the wrong path. That's what his organization is doing, trying to guide them so they won't end up delinquents. The French government has announced a series of measures to combat terrorism and to promote integration. Will they produce a new generation of Lassana Batilis? Many French and immigrants here are not so sure. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
23 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. A top Lord's Resistance Army commander is now in custody at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Dominic Ongwend will undergo medical exams after being flown yesterday from the Central African Republic and is expected to make his first court appearance soon. His arrival at the court ends a nearly 10-year effort to have him face three counts of crimes against humanity and another four counts of war crimes.
ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said today that Ongwen is among those who bear the greatest responsibility for LRA atrocities. The group is accused of killing and kidnapping tens of thousands of people across Uganda and three nearby countries over the past 30 years. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Ongwen's arrival in The Hague marks an important milestone in accountability and a step toward justice for those victimized by the LRA. A UN agency says the operation that ended Madagascar's locust plague is running out of money. The Food and Agriculture Organization warns the plague could re-emerge within a year if the funding shortage continues. The FAO says more than $10.5 million is needed to complete the locust campaign, which includes monitoring and spraying. Nearly $30 million has been spent so far. The locust plague began in Madagascar in 2012 and was brought to an end last year. However, the rainy season is approaching. The rains could create ideal breeding conditions. In news elsewhere, Yemeni President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi remains surrounded by Houthi militiamen in his residence today, a day after the group captured the presidential palace. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Houthi militiamen drove tanks through the streets of the capital, Sana'a, after capturing several key government buildings a day earlier. Houthi fighters were posted outside President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi's home, despite claims he was free to come and go. Government spokesman Raja Abadi indicated a scheduled cabinet meeting chaired by Prime Minister Khalid Baha had been canceled due to security concerns and the inability of ministers to reach the meeting. A Houthi commander posted outside the palace told journalists presidential guard forces had bombed civilian residences facing the building Tuesday before they finally surrendered. The owner of a restaurant not far from the palace complained that two rockets had struck his business within minutes of each other, causing considerable damage. Witnesses said a number of civilians were wounded in the shelling. Officials in the southern capital of Aden said they were closing air, sea, and land routes into the city to protest what they were calling a coup against President Hadi. Leaders of several other southern provinces also reportedly blocked access to their regions. Meanwhile, the Gulf Cooperation Council convened an urgent meeting of Gulf foreign ministers in the Saudi capital Riyadh to discuss developments in Yemen. Houthi rebel leader Abdel Malik al-Houthi insisted in a speech late Tuesday that President Hadi implement a power-sharing agreement reached several months ago among Yemeni leaders. He also insisted outside powers had no reason to fear what was happening in Yemen, but warned them not to meddle in his country's internal affairs. Arab media reported the Houthis are demanding 50% of key ministerial portfolios as part of the power-sharing agreement. Al Jazeera TV says the Houthis also insist 1,000 of their fighters be incorporated in the army and 1,000 more in the police. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Solly coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America, VOA.